water, so they go out and they steal other people's water, they fill up tanks on the back of their trucks and that kind of thing.
Do it in the middle of the night. If we catch them, we can actually increase our, the penalties legally to these levels. And, you know, it goes up to $5,000 a year. The hard part is you gotta catch the people. And that's the real tricky part.
Neil, hold on a second.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to imply that you have to have an ordinance.
Well, we have to have an ordinance or a policy or a resolution or something.
So we're going to do something like that.
Yeah. I think we, I
don't know.
I don't know what our current policy actually says. I'm going to take a wild shot that there is some kind of thing that says no stealing of water, but
I think so, yeah.
But back then, it's been elevating over the years, so I don't know where you guys, where this district is.
Okay.
But we'll have it reviewed and upgrade it so that we can comply with this. Southridge tank repairs. These are pictures from Sabati, Vice President Sabati. He had his camera one day, was here, and our chief water operator took him out and he took some pictures. This is the inside of one of the tanks. And as you can see, it actually looks pretty good.
Looks like a nightclub.
Yeah. You know, they're actually pretty big, pretty empty. So, but there's a lot of work that has to be done. You got scaffolding, you know, just to give you some pictures of what they're starting to do. It takes some time. That's the roof, ceiling, whatever you want to call it. And on to
ribbons. How long will it take to print?
6 to 8 weeks, but a couple more weeks longer because of the wetness, the snow and the rain.
Yeah. So, but they're getting there. Okay, the district revenues. Revenues are currently exceeding our expenditures. You can see in comparison to last year where things are kind of at. We're a little lower on the expenditures than we were last year at this time. Water revenues, which is mainly the majority of your revenues and expenditures, looks a lot like the previous chart. And once again, revenues are exceeding the expenditures. Wastewater, here's where we're at. We don't have a big spike this year. It looks pretty normal.
So these expenses are just operating expenses, not capital improvements, right?
Correct. There's potentially some capital improvements that we're looking at.
But would that come into the
small improvements to the existing operation to keep it going?
Right.
But we're holding off on any big ones until we know for sure where we're going with the treatment plant. And just for the record, to kind of close a loop on that one, I got a message today from Nathan, the engineer for the wastewater. The survey for the properties will be done hopefully by the end of next month, end of January.
Along those lines, there was some discussion about with the school,
yes,
acquiring, that is progressing with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yes, as a matter of fact, they're involved with us on the survey and everything.
Okay.
They're very cooperative in this fashion. Total water supply, this year it's a little lower than average last year. Just another version of the same thing. This is like a history to take a look at, see where we're at in comparison. To be honest, we're kind of like just a hair below average at this point in time. The wastewater treatment plant, we've had a little higher flows than average, and not really sure why that is, but we've had some. But it's kind of coming back down to the average now. And in comparison, this kind of gives you what our daily average is. We're still just below the daily average at the moment for the year. You know, I mean, that's kind of a running total. So. And just as an overview, the COVID-19, the reimbursement aspect, we submitted all the forms. We had another form we had to fill out. We sent that in, now we're awaiting the results. And They didn't give us a real timeline on that. So, you know, I don't have one to give you, but as soon as we hear anything, you'll know. Personnel manual, still with staff, we're still working on it. The water policy, it's on hold till we get the personnel manual done. Once that's done, we'll get on to the water policy. And payroll, we're gonna do a modification to the payroll, and we're gonna go to a bi-weekly, and that'll be getting set up in the first year. With that, if you got any questions?
Semi-monthly now?
Yes.
Okay, how much rain did we get yesterday, do you know?
I didn't look. I know, we got a sensor.
An inch and a half.
Thank you.
On our sensor?
Yeah, when I looked on the app, yeah.
I saw 2.5 inches.
No, Mr. DeHart also took an inch and a half. He went online yesterday, because we have online.
When I looked yesterday, it said in 24 hours, we got an inch and a half.
Inch and a half.
But then it did start snowing after that, so I don't know about this one.
It's a great system on the website. I was looking at it all day long.
You can see right away. But the problem, you cannot see history. You can see a lot.
It's going to happen. It's real time.
Yeah, real time.
Oh, we lost everybody back there.
Joe.
Mr. Olson, any more questions?
No, thank you.
Mr. Kunkel?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Mr. Jin, did you have any questions?
No questions.
Mr. Zabadi?
Okay, so I wanted to know what progress we made on what agreed on a letter to the Board of Supervisors about the short-term rental program.
That letter was signed and going out. It'll probably go out tomorrow.
Could we get a copy of it?
Sure.
Okay. And then the other one, you are to make some contacts with other water districts to reflect in the governor's request for further cooperation between water districts. Have you made any progress in that?
Yes, I have. Put calls into both the districts, Pine Cove and Fern. I spoke with the general manager of Fern Valley. We've had a good conversation. We're looking at, they're more than happy to work with us in cooperation than anything we try to do. Have not heard back from Pine Cove.
And just a suggestion, maybe it's not useful, but one of the things that at least I would appreciate, if some attempt is made to make the criteria for water conservation for all the three districts at least cooperate and get together some kind of way that you could have everybody going on the same stage or some reflection on similar stage. This may be too difficult because you have different resources and sources, but at least some attempt should be made in that direction.
There's some effort that can be made in that, but I, candidly, the systems, at least between Fern Valley and our district, are quite different.
Yeah.
And so they're gonna have a completely different set of standards. You know, they get a lot of surface water, and you know, we have none. So, but in talking with them, the static levels of their wells seem to be very similar to ours. So if we kind of do the well side of the equation, we can probably work out something.
I thought there was an article in the paper, I don't know if JB or somebody else wrote, that actually their static levels up in Fern Valley are substantially lower. Maybe I misread it, but that was my impression.
Yeah, when I talked with the GM yesterday, or Monday.
When was it?
Monday, yeah, I talked with him Monday.
So my information is
incorrect. He was saying that his are right about average.
I see, okay.
So, all right. Let's see, so the other thing was,
any public comment on the general manager's report? I can't hear you, Becky.
We didn't hear a lot of it.
Oh yeah, the system went down.
Twice.
Long time.
And Jim is out of
it. Yes, there's Jim now.
Oh, there he is. All right. Good. For anybody who didn't hear my GM report. I can send you a copy of it if you'd like. Okay. I see Becky here.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, we'll move on to action item. Action item number one is appoint manager as the board secretary. The board of directors will consider appointing general manager Leo Habner as the secretary of the board of directors. This is being in compliance with certain regulations in the state and otherwise. So I will make the motion to appoint the general manager as the board secretary. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
All right, any public comment before we proceed? No? Good. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? Passes 5-0. Now, instead of the interim board secretary, you're the official board secretary.
I'm official.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
If we need to have a swearing in ceremony, we'll take care of that another time.
That's fine.
Item number four, Santa Ana River Watershed Weather Modification Pilot Program. We'll take information from the staff first.
We were approached. Sorry, let me get there. Yeah, we were approached and asked if the district would be interested in participating in the Watershed Modification Pilot Program. For lack of better tech, this is cloud seed. I mean, call it what you want, but it's basically cloud seed. And it's a process that works. Mother Nature has to be cooperative. And I've had some level of experience with this over the years, and I've seen that it has some benefits. I believe I actually made the conclusion that it might be a worthy project. There is a difficulty you have with this project, in the fact that you're trying to, for the lack of a better term, you're trying to squeeze the sponge and get every last drop out, okay? The problem is because your district is so small, and while the watershed is pretty good size, you're trying to squeeze drops of water into a very small space. So it has potential, it has benefit, but I'm gonna, Is Mark there?
I am here.
Oh, right. Mark, he's from the Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority. He'd like to give you a presentation about this. And with that, that's really all I have at this moment.
Mark, how long will your presentation take?
Between 10 and 15 minutes.
All right, we'll give you 10 minutes. Go ahead.
All right. Should I share my screen or would you prefer to show it on the
Side.
Why don't you go ahead and share your screen with everybody else? And we also have your presentation up here on our wall, and I'll follow along with what you do.
All right. Looks like I need to get enabled here by whoever is in charge of the host. Windows that disable participant screen share. Is there a staff person who can enable me as host?
We'll try to do it in 1 second.
We're all fairly new at all this. We're getting there.
I can't do this because I know nothing about it.
you should be able to appoint up to 3 or 4 people as hosts. It's often a good idea that way. If it crashes, you have 3 or 4 more chances to bring it back up faster.
Let's see. Let's see if I can bring this up here. Okay, can you see that?
Yeah, sounds like
a bit.
No.
There
it goes.
There.
Hey, we got it. Okay.
That's good. Let me just jump right into presentation first, a little bit about our organization. The Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority is a watershed agency. We cover the Santa Ana River watershed. It's about 2,860 square miles, and mostly the western portions of Riverside County, San Marino County, and North Orange County. We have 5 member agencies: San Marino Valley Watershed, Eastern Winds Watershed, Western Winds Watershed, Orange County Watershed, and Inland Water Utilities Agency. A little bit about how policy works, and Rich mentioned a little bit about this. How it generally works is there is a compact called SOAI, it's commonly used in all policy programs. It's passed the code, and it's vaporized basically, it's ignited by cocaine one, and it's released as an ash up into the atmosphere. And then it basically is the nucleus of a snowflake. It basically forms that cool pile up the air, creates an ice crystal, and the ice crystals mine, become snowflakes, and then fall back down to the earth, warmer temperatures, it might be rain. Cloud City has been around for quite a while, back since the 1940s. So in the early days, a lot of people thought that it was the answer to a lot of problems with the drought. But there was a lot of overselling. But over the years, a lot of more advanced technology has been applied, better weather forecasting. Computer models are more sophisticated, sea methods improved, and probably the last one is probably most important. There's now been scientific validation studies that really do prove that this, in fact, does achieve a 5-15% benefit of increasing snowpack precipitation. This has now been implemented all throughout the Western states. It is currently being implemented by power utilities, ski areas, water resource agencies, and irrigation districts. In California, we have a number of programs ongoing. Just a few of them are Santa Barbara County, San Luis Obispo, and Sacramento Municipal Watershed. Even the state of California has indicated that this is a safe and effective means of augmenting local water supplies. They have actually defined it as precipitation enhancement in the California water plan. So the ground-based seeding methods, most commonly used, the one on the left, is cloud nucleus generators. Basically, it takes advantage of the wind action, right, for the mountains. Basically, the silver iodide is ignited, releases an ash that you really can't see, and then goes up into the air by wind action. There's also others where on the coastline called automated high output ground sea units, and they can put out a little more effective than that from what turbulent conditions go on the coastline. In order to be able to operate a program like this, you need a license. So there's licensed operators and they carry liability insurance. And a lot of people ask that question, well, couldn't I be sued if I caught flooding downstream? Another part of all programs now is a suspension bulkhead. And you have great rainstorms like the one we just had, big snow conditions, we would not turn on the program. It would simply not be operated. We're looking for those situations where you might have clouds and you need a little bit more to just increase the precipitation of snowpack, again 5-15%. And that is when you turn on the program. There's no property state permit for these programs, so you do have to go through a super mitigating project. This has been in practice for over 50 years, and there's been no successful legal challenge. We don't think I can sue anybody for any reason, but for those lawsuits, there's never been any that have been successfully against the operator system in the United States. The potential environmental impacts is always something a lot of people ask about. The silver iodide is inert, it's not soluble or biologically available. Over 50 years of studies have shown it has no impact to the physical, biological, aquatic soil vegetation. Basically, it's on the scale of what we might call dust. It for your standard air pollution out there, it simply is indiscernible. You can't pick it up from any very small detecting devices that really look at the impacts of silver iodide. To give you an analogy of how much impacts we have, it's equivalent to about the operation of one diesel vehicle in all of LA County rent per year. It is simply imperceptible. But there it does have an impact, and it can be beneficial and can create more runoff and a benefit to the environment. So silver iodide basically cannot be measured above the back. There's been no effects, negative impacts over 50 years. More silver exposure in two fillings, more iodine in table salt. If you look at the compounds of silver iodine, both the largest elements of the periodic table, EPA has indicated that they have a limit of 0.1 milligrams per liter. The U.S. Public Health Service has a limit of 0.05 milligrams per liter. We do a seeding program at 0.1 micrograms, so you're 1,000 times less concentrated than the EPA standard. Why are we considering cloud seeding in the center of the watershed? Well, we all know we are in challenging times. The flows from our streams and rivers are dropping. There's more dry years, drought conditions, but the new normal will be in drought conditions. So why not look at other cost-effective means to increase our water supply at a fraction of input water. And it supports local water storage as well. We're not communities quickly, as more water, more snowpack occurs, more infiltration through groundwater basins. This program has been studied as part of Peace Work Study conducted in 2020 with the North American Weather Consultants. We're now in the process of doing CEQA and doing the ground seeding site analysis. We're now reaching out to a public agency across the watershed to inform them about this program, but also get their questions answered, make sure that they feel comfortable with this, and then we apply that feedback to our commission. There's no certainty that this program would proceed forward, but we would be also applying for a grant from the state of California. It's called Proposition 1 Round 2, and we cover 50% of the cost. We're envisioning a 4-year pilot program. Basically long enough so we can see that it has an impact. And there will be a validation process to ensure that in fact it is working. This is a picture from the actual video that showed you the blooms of the seed that occurs. And we basically have four target areas all throughout the San Francisco watershed. And we're seeking to locate the red dots, the ground seed units at the foot of these mountains. The wind actually take up. If you study the winds, this is what the projections show. What potentially we could receive is about 8,200 extra acre feet, about going to surface to about 16,000 residences as far as the total amount of water. About 8% increase. Not a huge drought busting solution, but it would definitely be a valuable asset to the overall water picture. Cost per acre foot, about $25 per acre foot for the quantity that you would estimate the cost of operating the program for just 1 year is about $208,000. This is a benefit cost ratio of about 10 to 1. American Society of Civil Engineers indicated we need at least a 5 to 1 ratio to far in excess of that. Many people have said that our untreated import water estimate there is really, really low. It's more realistic and higher. That cost ratio, that the cost ratio would be even more. So we have a very conservative estimate for that untreated, uncomfortable water. And as indicated before, we will proceed to verify the program. We will do a target control analysis to ensure that we are in fact seeing benefits. We want to evaluate the increases and from the pilot program we'll learn more what is really effective and also whether this is something we want to operate that more in the future. We would look at the operation, which is probably to see if these all make sense. Pilot program schedule, feasibility study is completed. We're now doing outreach to water agencies all around the watershed, basically getting their questions answered, and also asking if they would be willing to support this, if they're willing to put some money on the table for these purposes. The amount of money is really not that important. It is really a token of their support. The supplemental agencies would cover the balance of the share of local costs for the grant application that we would be pursuing. And the pilot program would be, again, shown there. Potentially a good start as early as the winter 2023. It depends on the grant and we have to go, but we're continuing to do outreach. So we're very much in the process of educating the public. The local Idlewild paper has an article about it, as well as again an Empire. They were very good articles, very fair. We understand there's always concerns, and we're here to answer those questions. But our ask today is to see if it's something your organization is willing to support. And if $20,000 gas is too much, it could be $5,000 or $10,000, which you feel is worth and just reflected that you support this type of program. And again, a pilot program to ensure that something like this can be done and is effective. So with that, that's my last slide. Happy to answer your questions.
Mr. Olson, any questions?
The financial contribution that you are initially looking for, is this an annual requirement or a one-time?
One-time request.
No further questions.
Program moves into full implementation 4 years out. There may be a possibility we can go back request additional funding to move full operation for the pilot or nine funding requests all proceed.
Mr. Conkle, any questions?
Yeah, how many agencies or cities are you trying to collect donations or contributions from for this?
There's about 60 across the entire watershed, and so far we've received commitments of $20,000 from the Chico Basin Water Conservation District. $5,000 from the San Antonio Water Agency, and the City of Corona is $5,000. But we just started this program about in late November, so I'm reaching out and requesting funding support. We've also addressed Big Bear and also Running Springs. And right now, all we're looking for is a commitment of funding, not really any deliberate funding. It would be something to request that you budget for in the next fiscal year. Very early in the process, we're anticipating many more will see the value of this and also contribute.
And you're trying to get a matching grant for the same amount for like $250,000 or something?
Yeah, well, we operate this for 4 years after roughly $210,000 per year. You're looking at an overall cost of about $800,000 when we had the validation. A separate independent consultant to make sure that validation occurs, probably adding another $50,000. So somewhere in the range of about the overall program, about $900,000, I guess.
I don't have any more questions.
Mr. Jen, do you have any questions?
Well, the way I understand is you're looking for $20,000 from us. It's over a 4 year period. Then
That was our initial ask. I want to let you know, Lou, that when we started this process, we thought that we would approach smaller agencies with something on the low end, closer to $20,000, but in essence, about $5,000 per year. Since that time, our general managers of our member agencies said, you know, that ask sounds pretty high, so maybe you scale that back a bit. So we're now reaching out and suggesting a $5,000 to $10,000 request. So Basically, the amount really is not that important. If you feel that 20,000 is unaffordable, but you could do 5,000. That again is a token of support that you'd be readily open to receive.
That was my only question. Thank you.
Mr. Zabadi?
So I gather from your presentation, this program is sort of its infancy. You are still studying it. You haven't received the okay from the governmental agencies as to impact. What does it mean when you want a commitment? I don't understand the word commitment. What does that mean?
Well, our supplementary agencies felt that before they submitted the funding, a local match for this grant application and to move forward with the program, they really wanted us to go out to the local agencies, the 60 agencies across the watershed, so we're doing a lot of presentations, and asking them if they have any questions, to give them information about the science, the facts, and then ask them for a commitment to funding. When we say commitment, we simply would ask that you budget.
Are you asking us to agree to gift orders this project every year $5,000, or are you asking us to express our interest in it should it come to fruition? And that's what I'm trying to find out.
The money will not be needed next year until the program got started, and we also are seeking a grant to cover 50% of the costs. So we simply would request that you authorize your staff to budget the monies, and if the program doesn't go forward, we would never send an invoice for this. It would be something that we would seek to invoice you in text until the program actually started.
I'm sorry, I'm still missing the point. Are you asking us to commit ourselves, by sort of a contractual sense, to come up with $20,000 over the 4 years? Are you asking us just to express an interest? Or are you asking us to commit $5,000? I don't quite understand your response. What are you asking us?
We'd like your commitment to provide $20,000 for this program.
And what happens if the program doesn't go? I mean, lots of steps, it won't go. You won't get the negative statement.
Yeah, if the program doesn't go forward, we won't build it.
I see. So essentially, based on the schedule, in about a year, you know, it will go forward, therefore, would be $5,000.
Right.
Is that right?
And again, the amount of money, my original request to your general manager was $20,000. Since that time, we have scaled back our asks on coming back to you and saying, if you can't afford $20,000, you can afford $10,000 or $5,000. Again, the amount is not that, it's basically the desire to provide $20,000 for funding a local charity. They basically want to see whether you're supportive enough.
I got it. So the way I see it is, we should, if we're going to vote at all, it's going to be $5,000 toward the project and see what happens, whether it goes or not, basically. Well, that's my last question.
Excellent. If there's no other board comments, we'll go to the public comments. Any public comments? Mr. Dave?
Yeah, can you guys hear me with this?
Yeah.
Wow, nice. I gave all of the board members and the general manager and the town crier a copy of a research paper, and it has everything, all their facts in it cited, so you can look them up yourself if you don't believe them, but I've highlighted the issues, and I promise this will be less than 4 minutes. Much of the literature substantiates that not only does cloud seeding fail to achieve its desired effect, it also yields harmful consequences. Some of these consequences include rain suppression, flooding, tornadoes, and silver iodide toxicity. The Office of Environment, Health, and Safety, UC Berkeley, rates silver iodide as a Class C non-soluble inorganic hazardous chemical that pollutes water and soil. It has been found to be highly toxic to fish, livestock, and humans. The manufacturer of the silver iodide that's used for weather modification, Deepwater Chemicals, warns of potential health effects of the silver iodide in the material safety data sheet. Chronic ingestion of iodides may produce iodism. Under the guidelines of the Clean Water Act by the EPA, silver iodide is considered a hazardous substance, a priority pollutant, and a toxic pollutant. Silver residuals have been detected several hundred kilometers downwind from previous seeding events. Silver leaches into the groundwater, streams, soil, and the root systems of plants. Concentrations in precipitation resulting from cloud seeding with silver iodide were 10 to 450 compared with concentrations of 0 to 20 without cloud seeding. The question is not that is cloud seeding harmful, but how harmful. It is obvious that it's significantly harmful. And I don't know if you guys got a chance to read this or not yet, but they're all cited, and you can look them up yourself. But basically, it can't be controlled at this point in time, so there could be lots of catastrophic events. I didn't even know until this presentation that acetone was used, and it's a known carcinogen for liver cancer. I would recommend to the board that we not only don't approve this, but we send a letter to SOPWA stating that we do not want this in our area. Because once our groundwater is contaminated, it's contaminated. Thank you.
Any other public comment? Mitch?
So with this cloud seeding and the consequential precipitation, who receives that precipitation? I mean, is it going to be more generalized in the whole area, or is it going to be more, you know, say towards the Corona area?
The quantities vary among the target areas that we shown here. Look at this particular table. The, for example, your area would be the
it's in the back.
Your east area, actually, the quantity is about 300. So it's not equal among the target areas.
Always.
In addition, this is an estimate at this time. And to sort of address some of the issues that were brought up, we certainly can find a lot of old information on the internet, a lot of past studies. But we at SOPWA, as well as all the other seeding programs across the state, accepted by the state, have to go through CEQA. It's a requirement. And we want to make sure that it's following all the standards of science, the federal government, the state government, and this is our intent. And we are basing this on what we know based on scientific studies. There are ongoing programs in the other states, and I would encourage people to talk to the experts that I have, and make sure they feel comfortable. This is an accepted technology, but it's not brand new. It's not something that is intended whatsoever to cause harm or community impacts.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any other public comment? No? Okay. At this time, we'll entertain a motion.
I would make an initial motion to table it for the next time, see how much interest is expressed by other water agencies in this watershed area, and then decide whether we want to participate or not.
I have a motion to table. Is there a second?
Yes.
Second by Mr. Olson. Any further discussion? No? All those in favor of table, aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstention? Table 4-1. We'll move on to item number five. We'll turn this over to the board secretary.
One moment, please.
Secretary.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I got this straight. We're tabling the item until we know for sure how many are joining, right?
Yeah.
Additional information.
Yeah, we'll put it on a future agenda when we have means to do so or reason to do so.
Okay.
The current president and the current vice president to continue their officership, their positions. So you need to go one by one.
Gotta go one by one.
Sorry.
But that's okay. So would you like to do the president first?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Mr. Shelley.
All right.
Second.
We have a second. Are there any other motions on the table?
About the president?
Anybody else want to nominate somebody else? Okay, no, none. All right. So we have a first and we have a second.
This is I.
Okay, hold on a second here. I got to fill out this. Okay. And this requires, I believe this is a roll call vote. All right. Director Jin.
Aye.
Okay. Director Kunkel.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
Vice President Sabati.
Yes.
President Shelley.
Abstain. Yes.
You usually
abstain. I usually do.
That's the first time.
Okay.
I nominate Peter Sabati as Vice President.
Yes.
Okay, so we got Peter. Did Les, that was a second?
Second, yeah.
Any other nominations? Hearing none, I'll call for the roll. Director Jin.
Approved.
Okay. Director Kunkel.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
Vice President Sabati.
Yes, following Chip's example.
Yeah. President Shelley.
Yes.
Okay. Approved, 5-0. Congratulations, you still have the torture.
One more year.
Item number six, discuss and potentially modify existing COVID-19 policy. Board of Directors will consider modifying the district's existing COVID-19 policy. Turn the time over to President or Vice President's body.
So there are lots of issues here, and a lot of them are legal, and we have our counsel here to educate us. But the basic issues are, can we require, should we, or can we require vaccinations? What is the, what should a particular employee bring to us when, if they had the COVID, to return to work? Payment during the absence? What are the rules in the workplace, et cetera, et cetera? So there's all kind of conflicting regulations under federal and state law. But essentially, I think this is a great deal of it is up to the manager as running the responsible for the employment practices here. Nevertheless, I think we should provide some kind of direction. Now, I am not sure, but if my memory is correct, I think we had some kind of ordinance or some kind of regulation in the past.
Yes.
Which if I remember, required that people to wear masks under certain circumstances, but not much beyond that, if it's my recollection. Did you ever find the reg?
The
I gave you a copy of the what you guys approved back in about a year ago. So, and it basically said follow CDC guidelines and college. So what we have done is basically done that. We've had great success. We've had nobody at work while on the job either give COVID or receive COVID.
Sorry?
We've had nobody at work who has been on the job get COVID while they're on the job or give COVID to somebody from us to the public.
But of course we have had employees who suffered from COVID.
We've had employees who've had COVID, yes. And but they got them outside of the work environment.
Right. Okay. So I'm not sure what I want the board to do, but basically I think there should be some coordination with council to find out if we want to require vaccination. Is that possible? What is the particular proof that's got to be brought in by the employee to demonstrate that they can return to work safely, and some other issues?
Or that they have it.
Or that they have it.
Just a home test if they have to go to a laboratory or
something. Or all those other things. And I think this intersects with federal and state regulations. For my limited research, and I can be corrected immediately by council, vaccination can be required to begin with. You can ask for a medical certificate on returning to work, provided you can't ask it about any physical problems they had, but you can basically ask them, have you been okayed by a physician to return to work? And you can require masking. As a matter of fact, under the governor's order, which took effect last week or this week, people have to wear masks
today
immediately. And there are other rules that are in effect, which is at least going to stay in effect until the middle of January. So that's my comments.
Okay. Mr. Olson, any comments?
I'll reserve for now.
Mr. Kunkel?
Yeah, I think we need to review this policy a little more. I think COVID's not going away. It's going to keep going, different variations. So how do we deal with this as an organization for the safety of everybody, but also so we have a workforce here to deal with stuff?
Follow Cal OSHA and the CDC.
Mr. Jin, any comments?
I think we should review the policy and make sure we're meeting the guidelines, you know, for the whole organization.
Thank you. I'll make a comment. I'd like to make sure that our policy is the same as it would be for any disease. Any disease that should come up in the future, I think that designing a policy around a particular disease that is kind of the disease du jour is poor policy making. It confines you and makes it so that you have to make additional changes in the future. It'd be nice that if we had the ability to make some standard operating procedures that we followed, no matter whether it was tuberculosis, whether it was AIDS, whether it was HEP, or any other disease that comes along that we might have. I think we need to have a well-rounded policy that covers any and all illnesses that could be affected. I know that there is already a requirement to have an illness and injury prevention program in the state of California, which we follow. And I think that it's good advice to work with our council, because even if we do come up with a policy this week, the policy may have to be modified next week because of changes to local, state, and federal requirements. And we want to comply with all of those. So I think sometimes when we try and make a policy that is very, very strict and very, very minutia-oriented, it really causes problems, because we don't know what's going to happen next month, next week, next season. And we have to make sure that we can be ready for all of those contingencies. So I support the fact that we work with council on something that is legal and able to work within the organization, not only for this disease, but any other illnesses or disease that we might encounter.
If I may, I think that's a good goal. On the other hand, COVID is very different and very separate, and the accommodations required on the EOC and the state's regulations are quite different. But I think both of those can be taken care of. I have a particular question, and I don't know if council can answer the question, but it seems like that you may be required to report the fact that somebody had COVID under the EOC and the state regulations. That's Form F-300. You should check on that. That's a sub-issue. Yes?
If I may. So just to answer a couple of questions, the Cal OSHA doesn't have specific guidelines on whether or not to require vaccinations. It's left up to the employer. Some public agencies have decided to require that, and some have not. But that's a policy decision that is vested in the new board. I'm not sure about any legal requirement of an employer to report to the state any positive cases, but I can look into that.
So you look up the Form F-300, EEOC form, and it requires such reporting for, well, there are different degrees. I don't want to go in detail, whether it's serious or not serious, and the cutoff is 10 employees or 5 employees, but you may want to look into that. Just a minutia, just to make sure that we follow it. Then, having finished the discussion, maybe I should make a motion for something.
No, do you have any other comments, Mr. Zanotti?
Comments. I mean, no. Comments.
Okay. Any other public comments? Mr. Hunt.
Yes, sir. I love this microphone. Thank you. I have a brief...
We'll wash it after.
I have a brief history of our policy, and mainly for Steve, but also to remind the rest of the board. I went back to the old minutes. From the start of the pandemic in November 2020, our policy was employees can wear a mask if they want to, and nobody has died yet, so we must be doing okay. So on November 18th, 2020 board meeting, I made a motion, Director Jin seconded, that one, we post on all exterior doors, masks required when 2 or more persons are in the same room. 2, that 1 person per district vehicle. And 3, masks required outside within 6 feet of another person. Those were simple, easy to follow CDC guidelines, and it gets really complicated when CDC's talking about stuff now, if you've been vaccinated, if you've been double vaccinated, all that. So those were pretty simple and easy to follow. It passed 4-0-1. Vice President Zavadi abstained. I assume he had a mask stock in some manufacturing company or something for abstaining, I'm not sure what.
But it's in a different country, so we can't.
Okay. Yeah. So once that was initiated.
I wasn't spreading the disease under any circumstances. I just want to make sure that record is clear here.
The GM response to that policy was to put field staff on half-time alternating schedule. Our small field staff of 4 could have easily performed separate functions all day long without ever coming in contact with each other. It only served to train the field staff to be lazy. I think it was very poor management.
Ooh, I am going to stop you right there dead in your tracks, Dave. That is a... You cannot sit here and tell me that we train people to be lazy.
Well, that's...
That could be your opinion, but that is definitely not a fact. So watch your words carefully in this room, please.
I will, and that
Thank
is my
you.
Opinion. Okay?
Wow.
So on May 14th, 2021, the agenda for the May 19th meeting was released, and item number 6 had the GM recommend, in keeping with existing successful CDC COVID-19 protocols, and rescind, which should have been rescind, not rescind, all previous COVID-19 policies. That was actually the last straw to lead to my resignation because I felt like the GM was playing a little passive, aggressive chess game with me on the whole COVID masking thing when all I was trying to do was keep the staff safe. So, Vice President Zabadi made the motion, Director Jin seconded, implement district-wide policy adhering to CDC guidelines, and it was approved 4-0. Which, basically, the one we had in place was CDC guidelines, so I don't know why we made that, but anyway, the CDC guidelines, as of last week, get vaccinated, wear a mask. It says if you're fully vaccinated to maximize protection, possibly spread COVID-19 to others, wear a mask indoors, stay 6 feet away from each other, avoid crowds and poorly ventilated spaces, test to prevent spread to others. I don't know if IWD is doing any kind of testing with their employees if they get sick for coming back to work. Unvaccinated employees should probably be getting tested once a week. Wash your hands often and cover coughs and sneezes, clean and disinfect, and monitor your health and safety daily. So those CDC guidelines is what our current policy is right now. And obviously we're not following them. The board very seldom follows them with as far as masks go. I find it really troubling that the GM refuses to wear a mask at all, especially when it's a statewide order. I don't know if the board has any problem with that, but I, as a customer, do.
You're free to leave.
I am free to leave.
Yeah, thank you. You are.
Okay, so basically, as far as vaccinations go, I think the easiest way is just to ask our employees to get vaccinated, and if they don't, they need to test weekly at their own expense and wear a mask the whole time they're at work. I mean, that usually works for almost every other company. So, thank you.
Any other public comments? Mitch, go ahead.
I'm one of the exceptions.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Joe, can I get you to move over to that chair?
I'm sorry.
Thanks. Thank you very much, appreciate that. Go ahead, Mitch.
Let's say I may be one of the exceptions or whatever, but even though I have been vaccinated, when my water district told me that it was basically a vaccination or get out, I left. Now that was, you know, so can we really afford to lose people over something like super trivial? That's it.
Thank you. Any other public comments?
Yes, I have one.
Go ahead, Ms. Clark.
I did not hear what Mitch said.
If I may, Mitch said that he was at a district and their policy that they put in place was get vaccinated or you will no longer be employed there. And he decided to no longer be employed there. Even though he was vaccinated. And he doesn't think that we want to put ourselves in a situation where our district has employees leaving because we do have a limited number of employees and we're not sure how quickly we could replace them is the inference that I took from that comment.
Okay, and is Mitch a current employee?
No.
Mitch is
a member of the public.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and address that.
Yeah, sorry.
He's a member of the public that often attends our meetings and worked at another district for decades, is my understanding.
Correct.
All right, thank you.
Any other public comments? Any final comment from council? Council has no further comment. Is there a motion that anyone wants to make?
No, I want to make some further comments before that. Obviously, there is...
I'll allow 5 more minutes of comments.
Oh, I'm much shorter. Obviously, there's a difference of opinion on this stuff. And obviously, maybe some members of the public doesn't recognize that there is a great complexity in the regulations we're all subject to, both federal and state. And obviously, this district and every other district has only 2 purposes. One, to keep everybody safe, and keep our customers safe at the same time. What is the best way to achieve that is subject to discussion and subject to regulations. And it's interesting, you know, among the employees, without naming them, who caught COVID, one of them was vaccinated and the other wasn't, or et cetera, et cetera.
I'm a little concerned that Mr. Zabadi knows the vaccination status of our employees without their consent.
I'm sorry. Actually, that information, if I would have it, which I don't have, I just guess. That would be whatever. Neither here or there. I don't really have any particular information. That was the gossip I heard at my old man's club. And so, leaving that aside, I think I would like to make a motion, or you want to make a motion. The motion would be to direct our general manager to consult with our council to work up a appropriate policy concerning illness and COVID, and to report back to us for us to decide.
So I'll entertain that motion to direct the general counsel to come up with a policy in conjunction with our council. Is there a second on that motion?
I second it.
And seconded by Mr. Kunkel. Any further discussion? No? All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Roger, hear me.
Opposed?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Director comments. Mr. Olson?
I would ask that when that comes back, I'd like to see side by side. I see the memo here from April 15th of 2020 that talks about what we're doing. I'm listening to Mr. Hunt about telling me that our current policy is to follow CDC guidelines, which is actually fairly vague with regard to specific items. Just saying we're going to follow CDC guidelines. I don't think the CDC guidelines indicate that if somebody's not vaccinated, that we would have the option to request that they have a test. So I'd like to see specifically what our current, if we do have a written policy, I'd like to see it side by side with what is being recommended.
Mr. Kunkel, anything on director's comments?
Nothing.
Mr. Jin, anything on director's comments?
Put that bottle down.
Yeah. I take it that was a no.
Thank you. Thank you.
We have a time delay.
We look forward when you get back into our galaxy, Les.
May the power be with you.
Mr. Zabadi.
No.
I'd like to make a director's comment. Mr. Jin and I have not met, but I will be contacting him for the questions for the employee retention survey that we'd like to do. We passed those out. I've had a chance to review them. We gave a copy to the manager also. Mr. Jin has a copy. I'd ask Mr. Jin to contact me within the next couple of weeks with his top 10 questions out of that packet, and perhaps we could go over it and make a presentation at the next meeting. He nodded his head in agreement, so that's great. If there's no other final public comments? No? Before we recognize Mrs. Clark, Mr. Crumrine, thank you very much. It was good to see your face. And I encourage you at future meetings to use the same amount of questions and concerns. Mrs. Clark.
The sound was great. Would you please tell IFPD what you did?
Thank you very much. We appreciate your comments and how wonderful that we sound.
Oh, I am so glad that I'm so glad you worked on it. I appreciate it.
And now, finishing our broadcast for this evening, we'll announce our next meeting. We'll have our next meeting in January. On the third Wednesday at 6 o'clock, And we look forward to having anyone there that would like to attend, and we will continue to be broadcasting as we are now. Thank you very much. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? Passes.
Aye.
Meeting's adjourned until the next one.
You want to turn that off, Mr. Secretary?
Yes.
Please.